We're talking demons with the demologists James Anito and Carl Johnson, and we'll be back with your calls as well on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We have our two demonologists with us, James Anito and Carl Johnson. Carl has just sent Lex the photo of the demon he was talking about last hour, so as soon as Lex has it posted, we will let you know and get rolling with that. That's incredible. What does this, we'll talk to you, James, and bring you back on here for a sec along with Carl. What does the fact that there are so many demons out there in this universe, what does that say?
That's a good question. You know, I think that it says that regardless of what you are, or who you are, anyone can fall. Anyone can go to the realms of evil tendencies, even beings that can't be seen. And I think that clearly shows that even as humans, a physical being, that if we follow the same guidelines and same ways that these supposed demons or fallen angels did, we too can fall. So that's what it shows me.
Carl, I guess anybody who might have been on the fence about whether there was a God, if you realize there are demons, there's got to be a God, huh?
It's all very mysterious, but yes, you would think there's the other side of the coin where there's darkness, there's light, and light, darkness, and one candle will dispel the darkness. So even though there's a plethora of demons, and we could never even estimate how many, creation is indescribably vast, and that is one manifestation of creation. So they're out there, but so is the good. The angels, the good forces, don't get as much press for some reason.
No, they don't.
The ones are more interesting.
They don't.
To us. Does
good win all the time?
Ultimately.
In the long run.
Good may lose some battles, but it wins the war, you might say, the celestial war. So I think ultimately good will always triumph because good is rational, good is beneficial, good is balance. Whereas evil is chaotic and deception and indecisive and just a mess of things. So eventually, you know, order does find itself.
James, go ahead, Carl. Go ahead.
I used the term more like order and balance rather than good and evil, you know, and chaos and disruption for evil. But it adds up to the same thing.
James, what do you think about that?
Oh, definitely. I can't really say any much more than what Carl said. You know, that definitely there's an order and balance. Good will always prevail because we could just see it in our daily lives, you know. We spiral down when we have a negative mindset. Nothing good comes from negativity. So always beauties and loving life comes from the goodness of life. So I definitely agree good always wins.
Let's go to the phones. We'll take questions for both of you. We'll go to Coachella Valley in California. Victor's with us on our wild card line. Hi, Victor.
How are you guys doing? I would like to know if you guys ever heard of Hellboy, the movie, and if you know anything about it. If you think it's a true story, because I have some information that you guys might be interested in.
All right, Hellboy the movie. Any one of you see that one?
I've seen it, yes. I like, because it does draw on real premises of demons, of demon lore. You know, I mean, it's fanciful, and the demon does become a reformed demon, but he's a renegade demon that, you know, turns his back on the Infernal Empire. And,
yeah.
You know, does actually works for good. He sees a sense in goodness, you know, the imbalance, despite his many years of
training. They won him over.
Training. Yeah, it does. And it's kind of like, you know, the demons are thought of as being rebellious. They rebelled and were cast out of heaven, traditionally. So this one went the opposite. He turned around and decided to be a force for the good. But they do incorporate a lot of demon lore into that. And
to me, that
made it more plausible, more believable, if you will. You know, I could enjoy it more because I have that suspension of disbelief because this is like a real demon gone renegade. Interesting premise that had never been done before.
Victor, that was Carl, and what did you have for him about the movie?
What, me? What about the movie?
Victor, you still there?
Oh, I just wanted to say that I saw him a couple of times, and he was for the good of human man. He was for the good.
Yep, exactly. It's what Carl was saying. And
I mean, if a demon, even a demon, can be reformed, I guess there's hope for most of us.
Is that real? Can a demon really be reformed?
No.
I didn't think so. No,
really.
It's never really happened.
It makes for an interesting story, but I couldn't conceive of that. It's the unknown. I don't know how much margin of choice a demon would really have, but what makes them a demon is that they are irredeemable. So I'm saying probably not. Again, it's unknowable. I'd like to think so. I just don't believe that they could be.
Our first-time caller, Lori, is in Forestall, Missouri. I know where that is. Hi, Lori.
Hi. What I was going to talk about tonight is recently this fall we purchased a farm out in western Missouri, and we believe that the house is haunted. There's several reasons about this. My grandchildren were there one day and helping us saw up some dead trees in the yard. It was a very windy day. They looked up and they saw a curtain open, and they didn't see anybody there or any fingers on it. They told us about it, and we came to look, and doggone it, if it didn't go shut, and then it opened up again and was held that way. Well, later on that day, my husband went upstairs to look, and there are no curtains at that window, but it was a definite curtain being opened. The other thing is he was out there a few weeks ago. The house is built in 1870. It's going to come down when we get our new house built. Anyhow, he was rearranging a door because it was sticking in that.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got finished with his pounding and whatever else he was doing, a few minutes later, he heard a distinct tapping, like a hammer tapping. It went tap, 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 or it was pounding from upstairs. And the last thing I got to say about the place is we found a grave in the front yard of an infant, evidently.
A grave in the front yard? Jeez.
Yeah.
All right, Carl, you're the expert in farmhouses.
I've been to a few. One pretty notoriety, with a lot of notoriety, notable one. Oh, well, often families were buried on the property, and very rural settings in the 18th and 19th centuries. And it seems like there's a little spirit who wants to be known, wants to be recognized. I would not consider that to be demonic. I think it's just the lost souls. Again, we don't, there should be rules against this. Apparently there are not, that an infant soul should be trapped on earth, or if it is an infant.
Oh, that's interesting.
It never was able to mature. So it wants to come home. It wants to be nurtured. It wants belonging. It recognizes that setting, you know, as its home, and it wants to come home. This is all supposition, of course, but this is, one can't help but associate that small grave with the haunting in the house.
So it's not unusual to have a lost soul.
Right, it does happen. I mean, again, it shouldn't be. The spirit should be reclaimed if, you know, they're snuffed out, the life is snuffed out prematurely. But this, it seems like a little presence that wants to come home. I think a part of the human psyche survives on Earth or remains on Earth. And that part of the human psyche is trying to find resolution. It's trying to get its way back. It's trying to find belonging and grounding, you know. And sometimes if you treat it as a living person, it responds. You know, say, you come in. It's all right. You can stay with us. That'll usually calm the haunting.
Are there many who die, Carl? Are there many who die who don't know they're dead?
It's a lot of guesswork, but yeah, I think so. Signs point to yes, that spirits just, you know, they go about their business. They're like atmospheric residual haunts, and they're aware of us, the living people, but they're in a time warp. They can't expiate that, and they keep replaying it and replaying that. I think, and this is guesswork, based on personal accounts I've heard, that they are kind of sentenced, even though they weren't guilty, they're kind of sentenced to reliving their life, and they know there's something different. Something has changed, but they are trying to grasp on to what they once knew. So they replay their lives, and they say, something's wrong. There are other people around me. They're not aware of me most of the time, but this is my house. I've got to keep moving through it. They're looking for rungs on a ladder, something that grounds them, something that gives them familiarity.
Right.
And what their ultimate fate is, I don't know. We try to say that they go into the light after a while and realize their condition. But perhaps they can't rationalize it. Perhaps they can't reason it out. Maybe they just fade after a time. There is some evidence that substantiates that some persons who have passed on don't know it, and they need to be subtly convinced. You talk to them, as sensitive people who believe in these manifestations. You talk to the spirit. Sometimes you can reason with a human-generated ghost. Talk to it, say, you know, we just don't want you to disturb us, don't scare us, but we want you to find peace. You stay with us for a time. Most people don't want the ghost around, but if you talk to it gently, sometimes you can actually reason with a spirit, with a ghost.
That's
not
impressive.
So with demons. You can't reason with them at all.
Right. They've got their own agenda.
Yeah. You just invite it in more if you try to reason with
them. Well, and speaking of demons, James, how do you know, James, that your house has a demon in it?
Well, there's of course, subtle signs that differentiate just normal haunting. One of the things I would tell people is intuition. You know, everybody talks about having sixth sense, mediums, clairvoyance, clairsentience, clairaudience, but at the same time, the token of it all is that you're dealing with this evil presence, and anytime I've been involved with the physical case of manifestation and an infestation, oppression, or possession, like the quality, anytime I've gone onto that property, it was a clear defining point of fright, flight, or flight. And any time that those cases I was involved in, that occurred. So there's usually always an uneasy feeling, an emotion of being scared, fearful. There's these emotions that lead to nightmares, lead to iconography, being inverted, moved around by a location. There's just a need for this entity to find a target, and usually you start seeing one individual being more molested than the others by this unseen force, and it unravels in like a psychic drama where there's a need for this person to start withering away, usually in a haunting of a non-demonic caliber. These situations don't really necessarily occur. People might feel drained because they, you know, if they're trying to communicate to the spirit uses their energy to use in form of communication. But a demonic entity just has so much involved to it where you definitely feel it.
It is amazing what they're after, James. I mean, you would think they want your soul or something like that.
Well, in some forms of fashion, you got to remember when possession occurs, there's only one soul can inhabit the human body, and of course that is defined in some questionabilities. But what we can go by, what we've understood by the many years, is that your soul can only inhabit the body. So once possession occurs, the demonic entity pushes you out and uses your physical body through physical manifestation, where it can physically do things through you. So I don't know if it's necessarily after your soul. I think it's more so a demon, its mission is to go against the ideologies of God, go against the ideologies of your faith and your goodness. So somebody like Padre Pio, who was oppressed most of his life, but never subsided from his faith, and stayed strong with his faith and was never able to go to that next level due to those possibilities. So I don't know if they go after, so I think they're more so wanting to tarnish your relationship with God or any relationship with any goodness in your life.
All right. And Carl, we have that photo that you sent to our webmaster. It's up in the Carousel Reel, folks. It's also on Facebook and Twitter. Kind of explain to those people who don't have the benefit of looking at it right now what it looks like.
Hopefully they'll see it later. Yes. Well, this was taken during a demonic situation, which I'm sure it was. I was with that case for some months. And the homeowner and his wife and children were driven out of the house several times. And this time I was on the phone with them when it happened. And eventually they were driven from the house altogether. They had to move. But he called me at about 2:30 in the morning, which it is here now. And they're saying that things were crashing around the house. Dinner plates were flying. his wife was being lacerated, and they just had to leave. And he had his evidence of the paranormal. He was documenting the haunting in their house on his camera. He had the presence of mind just before they pulled away. He went back into the house, retrieved his camera. And when he entered the house, standing at the top of the stairwell was this hideous man-like figure. Fortunately, he had the presence of mind to take a picture of it.
Uh-huh.
Not knowing if anything would come out.
Okay.
And it did. And that's what's in the picture. I call it Joker-esque. It has a terrible leering.
It's weird.
The jaw is distended as if, you know, like a python will unhinge its jaws to swallow an animal, to swallow a pig.
That's right.
But that's what it looks like. It's got a distended jawline and ghastly tongue rolling out of its mouth.
It's Joaquin Phoenix at his worst.
Shriveled nostrils, arched nostrils, and the eyes, just about indescribable. They're reptilian eyes. They're very malevolent looking. It's just a seething mass of hate. That's what this photo projects, hatred. It looks like it's laughing. You know, it's like it's disturbing. I don't think anybody can look upon that and be indifferent. It's looking into the face of hell.
Let's go to Joe. Joe in Long Island, New York for us.
Yeah,
go ahead, Joseph.
James and Cole. Two-part question on demons and very brief one on angels.
Sure.
First of all, when people say they're atheist, I think in many cases that's a cover story, so they don't get questioned about their meetings, et cetera, like Eyes Wide Shut. And I think what's going on now, you know, the masking, again, similar to Eyes Wide Shut. You know, you've got this vaccine, I think, is... right from the demons, an RNA vaccine. It supposedly will attack gametes of females, according to some doctors, and induce sterility. It's got nanoparticles in it, you know, that they're not telling people about, indicated by the 90-degree below zero temperature. So I kind of see the news also as diabolical. These people are foaming at the mouth trying to induce fear. And then my question on angels would be, how intelligent would you say angels are? I would assume they're smarter than us.
They should be more learned and well-knowing. They got a bigger scope to view. I don't know if angels vary in intelligence like humans do. Do they all have the basic substructure of intelligence, like a meta pattern that's common? Are all angels as smart as each other? I think some angels are more powerful than others and therefore probably more enlightened and aware. But angels, of course, are a force for the good. And some smarter angels out there. They are not all-knowing. They're not omniscient. They're not omnipresent. They don't know everything. They can't be every place, you know, and they can't be more than one place at a time. However, they got like a few steps up, a few notches up on the humans. You know, I don't know. It doesn't seem like there are as many angels as there are demons, but maybe that's because the demons are closer to us. They make their presence more known. They're at war with us. Angels are out there, though. I've had many accounts of angel intervention. They don't always show up when you need them, that's for sure. But people have told me remarkable stories about angelic beings that I believe a lot of credence to that. So, yeah, they're pretty smart.
James and Carl, we're going to take a quick break and come back for final phone calls with both of you here on Coast to Coast. Again, their websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And if you have a moment here, take a look at this demonic photo that Carl sent to us. It is really very, very strange indeed. And welcome back to Coast. Next hour, we'll be talking with a psychic about the angelic realm, so make sure you're part of Coast to Coast. And welcome back to our final segment with demonologist James Anito and Carl Johnson. Their websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Carl, there was a book by Christopher Marlowe called Dr. Faustus, where he wanted to cut a deal with the devil for all these great pleasures, and then, of course, the devil wanted his soul when the time came, and Dr. Faustus didn't want to give it up. Can you cut a deal with the devil?
Seems like a very moralistic lesson. In a sense, metaphorically, one can. Now, that was very much believed in during the Middle Ages and High Middle Ages and Renaissance, that somebody could transact with a demon, you know, an agent of the devil, and so to speak, sell their soul for worthly, you know, earthly gain. That can be done now, and I've seen it happen. If somebody makes a deal with God, you know, says, "Oh, if you just give me this or that, you saved my loved one," or
right,
you know, get me out of
please,
this
God,
like
I'll
that.
Never, I'll go to church every Sunday, whatever.
That, and they may keep to that for some months, but I've seen this happen where someone will turn and change and say, "Well, I'm out of danger. I'm out of that serious debt, or my loved one pulled through, and now I'm going to go back to my old ways and be worse than before." And suddenly things start working for that person, especially if that person promised this to God. I've actually seen this happen. It sounds fanciful and fantastical, but I've seen this happen where somebody, and actually it's somebody who's in prominence, you know, in social media, and this person made a deal with God and went back on it, like, "I'm out of danger. I'm out of that danger zone." And strange things happen around this person. Like, I know someone who was wearing a crucifix around her neck and a chain. The chain broke when he came into the room. Just some strange things happen.
Yeah.
People would feel the temperature drop. It's as though he effectively did sell his soul. He went back on that deal. I don't know if there was going to be ultimate consequence. We can't know that. But it had the signs that he was actually had some demonic force surrounding him. So I believe it can be done. I think it's metaphorical, but it's still real, and I think that can be done. Somebody gives away their soul for worthy gain.
And James, what are the best ways for people to protect themselves from demonic attacks?
Well, I think the best thing is, of course, having a good head on your shoulders, you know, having a good faith structure. You know, faith's very powerful. It's a key component of our human brain, regardless if you take out the nuance of theology or religion. You know, faith is a key component of our brain structure. So having good faith, you know, being a good person, try to live on a path of how you would want to treat others. And I think that is a good way to protect yourself from demonic attack or demonic infestation. And people that have lived good lives tend to never experience this, and people that have had traumatic experiences and might not necessarily be bad people, but have had these traumatic issues and experiences, and it revels in their life and it keeps in their life and they can't put it behind them, are the people that affect it. You know, it's life. There's going to be blemishes, but, you know, you have to get through the blemishes to see the beauties in life. And to me, that's the best way to deal or not to deal with a demon, is definitely have good faith and be a good person.
Back to the phones, Karen in Doyle, California. Welcome to the program. Hi, Karen.
Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you loud and clear.
Thank you. I want to tell you about the experience I had the beginning of spring of this year. Okay, I live in a very rural area, and I have a feeling that the guest you had on a month ago, he said, "I live in the part of California that's like Texas." I'm going, "Oh, I bet that's my district." District 1 is the largest district in extreme Northern California. And our I'll get it real quick. Our sheriffs have told us, "We can't get to you quick enough. If you're not a felon, don't walk out your door without a firearm."
Wow.
Okay. So I took my dog for a walk, and I was going down. My driveway is a mile long. So I was going, as it goes, I was going south, and then you turn. Then I was going east. My daughter was texting me, and I'd stop to text her back, and I heard something right next to me in this dry grass stuff, and I hear this sound like footprints. And I looked over. What the heck kind of animal would be to the left of me? And I look over, there's nothing there. And at the same time, my dog was sitting next to me, and she is looking to the east she was looking to the west as I was walking east. And so I got done with the phone call. I'm going, "Oh, it's getting kind of dark." I had my flashlight. I turned around. And as I was walking back toward the west to go home, and then you make a turn, and then I'm going north, and I saw this tall, dark figure with the head on it, and I went, oh, what the? So I walked to where it was, and I said, who are you? I'm not afraid of you. I peeked over because just next to it is like just the equivalence of a ditch.
Yeah.
And I said, who are you? In the name of Jesus Christ, I'm not afraid of you. And I took the flashlight. I looked, you know, next to it, which is like the, like I said, equivalent of a little ditch. And I took the flashlight and I spread it around where I was on, which I have easement priorities with the neighbors. And I took the flashlight and looked all over the place, looked east, west, north, and south. And I didn't see anything.
You couldn't find it?
Couldn't find it. But it was there. And like I said, when I was texting my daughter when she was at a couple towns over, because District 1 in California is the largest district in California, and our sheriffs are all about, they're all constitutional. If you're not a felon, don't walk out your door without a firearm.
Well, did this thing look shadowy or like a physical human?
Yes, it was like a black, shadowy figure with a head.
Well, let's ask Carl this. Carl, could demons take form like that?
Yes, unquestionably. They do manifest that way. There is something out there or in there called, I call them ultra terrestrials, not extraterrestrials, but ultra-terrestrials. There's something that exists in some dimensional plane close to ours, so close that the two dimensions bisect at times, and then we become aware of them. They're like demons, and perhaps they are demonic, but there's some shadowy form of existence that makes its way into our world, penetrate. They're probably around us all the time. We just don't normally perceive them, but she did. And sometimes people do. And they describe these shadowy beings. They're usually the height of a human being or taller. And they basically arms and legs, but just all black.
Why do they disappear like that?
I don't know where they go. We're not normally equipped to see them with our vision, but they, you know, our ocular propensity. We can't normally see them. Every once in a while, they get close enough to us in a dimensional sense that we do. They come through some portal. And we see them, and I think they're always around us. We just don't always perceive them.
Well, the fact that she saw this thing at night was amazing, right?
Yeah, and it's disturbing because I think they can come forward sometimes. And I don't think they necessarily want to be seen. Just sometimes they are. And she was, you could say, fortunate enough, in a sense of exploration, fortunate enough to perceive one of these beings. They're also called shadow persons.
Yes, exactly.
They're real. I photographed them. I know they're real. And enough people see them. Sometimes you see them for a fleeting second. You think it's a problem with your eyes. Sometimes, as in this lady's case, they're around for some seconds, and you actually get to study them and look at them, and so that you can describe them. I've seen them. They're around us. We don't know what they are.
Let's go to Cornelius in Alexandria, Louisiana. Hello there, Cornelius.
Hello there, George, Carl, and James. And I see
Hello
James
there.
Has a biblical name just like mine, Cornelius the Roman Centurion. George, I've got a question for you and then two for your other guests. My question for you is that when you were trying to talk to the heart book doctor, he never would listen to you. So I don't know what's wrong with him, but I'm not taking that vaccine. I believe it's demonic, and I believe COVID-19 is demonic, and they're just trying to do us in. And Catherine Austin Fitz was right. They're trying to get rid of churches and small businesses, and that's the backbone of the country. But all these big box stores, no, you can't catch COVID-19 in them. Now I'm going to go to Carl and James. I don't know if you watch CBS. They've got a new show on called Evil, where this black fella is studying to be a demonologist, and he's working with a psychiatrist going after, you know, demons and stuff like that. And do y'all believe that artificial intelligence, and I've seen Next on Fox, and then you've got on WGN now, which used to be on CBS, you've got Person of Interest. So I believe that that is demonic to artificial intelligence, and I'll take my answers off the air. God bless you, gentlemen.
Which one of you wants to take a jump at that?
I think there's something to it. Normally, I'm not a big one for conspiracy theories because it's next to impossible to get to the bottom of them. That's why they're called conspiracy theories. However, there are plots, there are cabals going on all around us. Just because I don't want to believe in them doesn't mean they're real. I mean, not real or real. Something like that premise of evil, yeah, that could be. I don't think it's a global organized cabal, a consortium that generates these cults, and like the Illuminati. But there is some basic organization. There are pockets and inlets of this where these things are real, where persons are schooled and they are taught to be demonologists, but not always on the good side. You know,
I'm losing you on the phone there, Carl.
Helping people. Things like that do go on. I just don't think it's organized, right, as I said, in a global sense. You know, people just aren't that organized. But, yeah, sometimes there are cults and they're underground.
And what about you, James?
Yeah.
My position.
So, you know, the show Evil is a very good show of interpretation with what Carl and I do. You know, he was the main figure, of course, is training to be a priest, and, you know, is in the role of a demonologist. And, you know, a good friend of mine who is a fellow demonologist, Ralph Sarchi, very well known, actually a consultant for that show. And, you know, a lot of the ideologies of what occurs, you know, comes from that man's mind. So, no, it's a very good show. And as far as diabolism in the world, like Carl was saying, you know, that is something that does exist, and people do want to revel in the evil of things and cause mayhem and distraction, and for their own goals and for their own mission, sometimes maybe manipulated by unseen forces. You know, of course, speculation, but we also know and understand evil does exist in many forms and fashion. So it's very interesting. And now that show Evil does take a good concept of it as well, and does actually, you know, before jumping to the preternatural, shows that the possibilities of the natural outweigh the unseen sometimes.
Let's go to Nathan now, driving in Idaho or Ohio. Welcome to the program. Hi, Nathan.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Go for it.
Oh, hey. First time calling here.
You're on, Nathan.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Fantastic. Great to talk to you. I've been listening for most of my adult life. This is really cool, man.
Thanks.
Hi. So, Carl or James had mentioned earlier that they don't think demons can be redeemed. But I would challenge the idea, at least a little bit, because if you study Tibetan Buddhism, you'll find is the story of a man named Padmasambhava. Padmasambhava was actually the person who brought Buddhism to Tibet. And in, I guess, his mythology or in the story of this person, Padmasambhava, it said that he actually converted many of the demons that roamed the mountains and hills and caves in Tibet to Buddhism. And those demons that would not convert to Buddhism, he forced them to guard temples there. I'm just wondering what you guys think of that idea, because it's a very separate mythos from the Western idea of a demon, but
sure.
Nonetheless, it's still about demons.
Okay, and it could be all myth, but what do you think, James?
Well, going on the realms of the Eastern religions, Shintoism and Hinduism are very influential in the demonic folklore, and like the Oni and, of course, the Zoras. For redemption, like Carl was saying earlier, I don't think it's possible, but in the same token, they fell. And I think any time, and we have to relate as humans, even though they're not human beings, and we do have the power of free will. Many of us do speculate and believe. And I think if they as well have the tenacity and the ability to live in some form or fashion, there could be a possibility of them redeeming. But even in a lot of Eastern culturalistic beliefs, you know, demons were demons, and they were the positive forces. So I don't really know. I've never seen or know of, and of course,
by demonologists or exorcists or even monks that I know of that use like Ferber daggers and their exorcism rituals. You know, I don't know of any demon in modern time, as long as this study has been expounded on, of a demon actually redeeming itself. So I don't think it's possible, but of course, impossible has impossible in it.
That's true. Gentlemen, thank you both for being on the program. It's great to talk with you, and it's great to have you as a resource for demons. You are both first-time guests.